I will get started with this morning session. So, good morning, everyone. I am Kamala Ramprasad de Silva, CEO of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. It is my pleasure to welcome you all this morning to our session entitled Reporting, Relating, and Trading in the Pandemic. How should listed companies, stock exchanges, and investors navigate through this crisis? Most pundits are predicting a world recession following the ravages of COVID-19. In fact, on March 9, 2020, the US stock market saw its steepest decline since, forgive me.
1987.
Yes. something went wrong with my, since 1980. Thank you so much, Nigel. Yes. but actually, from my research, I saw that this was compared with the 2008 financial crisis. Mm-hmm. And of course, this drop in the stock market was contributed to fears by everyone with respect to what was happening and the impact on the global economy with respect to COVID-19. And as governments take more stringent actions for separation, isolation, and quarantine, listed companies are facing a range of challenges. However, there are also opportunities in the midst of all the crisis. So at CCGI, we are pleased to have some of the key stakeholders in one room so we can discuss how crisis may be averted and we find new solutions to this new world we are moving into. So just before I hand over to the panel, I would like to make a few housekeeping announcements. We would like everyone to remain on mute during the initial panel discussion. You will be invited to make contributions or ask questions by the moderator at the end of the panel discussion. For participants who are new to this session and new to Zoom, there's an icon at the bottom of your screen which allows you to raise your hand so you can get the moderator's attention. At that point, you will need to unmute yourself. And then of course, we'd appreciate if you would press the mute icon again as soon as you are done so that we could minimize any disruptive noises. So today's panel comprises the top members of the region's largest stock exchanges. Firstly, we'd like to welcome Mrs. Marlene Street Forrest, Managing Director of the Jamaica Stock Exchange. Marlene is such an inspiration to all of us in the region. Having taken her stock exchange to the top of the world on more than one occasion, we are honored to have her to offer guidance and suggestions in our discussions for today's session. Our second panelist is Mr. Marlon Yard, Managing Director of the Barbados Stock Exchange. Marlon, as most of you know, is a long-standing director of the CCGI. When we first started these online sessions 2 weeks ago, I was pleased that he was willing to lead the charge, raising several issues that we would need to address in this unprecedented environment, including the fact that several listed companies have been unable to hold their scheduled annual meetings. Our third member of the panel is Amoy Van Lau, Chief Executive Officer of the Trinidad and Tobago Stock Exchange. The Trinidad and Tobago Stock Exchange is a strategic partner of the CCGI and was part of the partnership that led to the development of the Trinidad and Tobago Corporate Governance Code in 2013. As CEO, Amoy has pledged to work with us moving forward to help encourage listed companies in adopting and reporting on the guidelines of the code. So we are very, very happy to have her joining with discussions today to discuss challenges that are current with respect to our listing companies. Now, those of you who have been joining our sessions in the past know that we have been embracing the region to ensure that we are encouraging a Caribbean dialogue. So I am happy that today we would also be having, for the first time, someone from the Eastern Caribbean. And that is Mr. Trevor E. Blake, General Manager of the Eastern Caribbean Stock Exchange. I'm happy that Mr. Blake has agreed to actually move around some of his meetings that was scheduled for today so that he would be able to join us and be part of today's discussion. I think it augurs well and sends a message that we would be able to get more and more persons from the region getting together with us so that we could continue this dialogue. Our final panelist is Mr. George Shepherd, Chairman and CEO of the Shepherd Securities Limited. Mr. Shepherd would be offering more than a regional view in today's discussion, since his company does a lot of work outside the region as well. We are very grateful to Mr. Shepherd that he too sees the value of this dialogue and was willing to accept and join today's discussion at very short notice, I must say. So the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute has brought a panel together with these experts, but we hasten to add that COVID-19 has really brought unprecedented changes to our business operations and our lives. Although some months have passed since the discovery of the viral infection, we are not yet a month away from this when this was deemed a pandemic. So as such, I want to underscore that none of us really are experts in this present scenario. However, with collaboration and ongoing dialogue, we can minimize the impact to all of our lives. So now I would like to hand you over to our resident expert moderator, the chairman of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, Mr. Nigel Romano.
Thank you, Kamla. Good morning to all of you. And first, let me thank Marlene, Marlon, Amoy, Trevor, and George for agreeing to participate in this conversation, because at this point in time, with these unprecedented events that we're having to deal with, conversation is important so that we all continue to learn and grow together. I am a firm believer in looking for opportunity as opposed to being spooked by panic. And one of the things about situations like this is that you, as an investor, you have to look for the opportunity. And in my, from where I sit, I think the opportunities come in more than one way. One is looking for stocks that have been impacted by the panic and targeting investing in some of those. The other, I think, is even more. It's bigger than the stock market or investing, but the whole, how people have embraced the technology. Zoom is zooming, really. I've been using Zoom for the last 5 years, and it's a fantastic platform. But people are now, I saw somewhere where people were talking about the baby Zoomers, not the baby boomers, so that old people like me, well, I have been using it for a while, but a lot more people are becoming familiar with Zoom and exploring Zoom. And let me tell you, Zoom can do so much more than just have meetings together. You can actually break out people and all of that. But enough of that. So I welcome the panel, and I'm looking forward to how we look at the topic. Reporting, AGMs, and that kind of stuff, relating how investors and listed companies can now maybe get closer together so that investors have a better appreciation for the strategy and what it would mean for valuations and also trading. How can our investors trade and trade electronically? And hopefully George will help us with that, in addition to the perspective from the stock exchanges. So enough from me. And who is going to kick off? Is it? I'm not sure. Who is going to open the batting, as they say? Well, let me call on Marlene. Marlene is the stargate in the room right now. So Marlene, why don't you open the batting for us?
Okay. Good morning, everyone. It is really a pleasure to be here. Online, as you say, via Zoom. unlike you, Nigel, Zoom is really now something that I've done for probably 4 or 5 times. I'm new to Zoom, but I think this is a new norm. It is important, I think, to have this discussion in relation to how do we report within this time. Really, when we look at the COVID-19 and our response to it, we have to say that it is not a crisis as usual, because we expect crisis, but it is really a crisis unusual. And as a result of that, it is important that we look at how companies manage through this crisis. I want to start by just saying that, like many other markets, the Jamaica Stock Exchange has suffered a decline in our index, some 20-25%. It is going back up because we have had 4 consecutive days of improvement. However, during this crisis, we have had to speak with our listed companies, our investors, and also our member dealers, because it is important that within this time that there is a transparency and clarity of communication. It is very important that we do that. It is also important that we balance the crisis with governance. This we are talking about a governance forum, and it may be that within a crisis, persons feel that all governance issues will take a back seat. However, we feel that it is within this time that governance really matters. And we also believe that it is important that within this time that the board shows the direction and lead the conversation in terms of what is certain, what is not certain, you know, uncertainties. And we also believe that all companies need to look at their business continuity plan in a different light, because within the exchange, we do have a rule, a requirement for all our companies to establish a business continuity plan, and also that our member dealers must do that. But these are some of the issues that we are now discussing with the community. Now, what the stock exchange has realized, and I know all the exchanges would realize this, is that there is the issue of the reporting. An annual general meeting really is upon us. It's upon most persons who report, who has a year end December. And by virtue of our Companies Act, it states that the companies must have an AGM in person, and the extent is within 120 days of the year end. However, that could be 120 days of the last AGM, but that could be extended to another 3 months. So we have advised companies that one of the method of communication is to say to their investors, their shareholders, one, are we going to postpone, because many companies had already sent out the dates of their annual general meeting. So the advice to them that we have given is to communicate again to their shareholders, investors, about whether their AGM will be postponed, but to bear in mind that there is the window of that 3 months after. We have also communicated to them that they need to look at their articles of incorporation to see where in the article could allow them to have an annual general meeting other than in person. However, let me just hasten to say, even where that is concerned, they would have to apply to the courts to allow them to have this, because our Companies Act speaks of in person, that the annual general meeting must be in person. So that really is, in a nutshell, about AGMs. But in respect to the reporting of the quarterlies, we are quarterly audited financials and also interim financials, audited financials, and annual reports. The stock exchange has advised, because we are true, as a listed company, we are true to our mandate of communication. We have also advised that the listed companies will have 15 days extension on financials that are due between the period of March to April. Having said that, with the pandemic, we have also opened dialogue with them to say, in the event that this does not, the pandemic continues as is, there will be consideration, and we'll do that afterwards in terms of extending that period. I want to pause because I know others will be communicating as well, and to say that what we have also indicated to our listed companies, that at this time, they also have to be conscious of things like cyber risk, because we know and we have seen something similar that has played out, not with our listed company, but in the market, where that persons are now taking more steps to see if they can interfere with the technology in terms of, hacking. So we have also had a dialogue with them. We have also said to them that in this time, it is important that they find the opportunity to speak more frequently with their shareholders. I am going to pause at this time.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Marlene. And let me take it off over to Marlon, and then we will hear from Amoy and then Trevor. Go ahead, Marlon.
Yes. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for your to be on this panel and share some thoughts about the Barbados Stock Exchange. I think Marlene has covered in detail all the considerations that we two are considering. I should say, too, that we have seen a fall off in trading activity at the stock exchange. There's still some trading, but there has been a fall off. And we have put our business continuity plan in place. Right now, we are basically on a skeletal team. And what we've done at the stock exchange in Barbados is that we've limited access to the office by persons visiting the office. We've also, we're inviting people to do business with us over the phone or via email, and we've notified the market to that effect. We've split the office into two teams, Team A and Team B. I lead one team, and my deputy general manager leads another team. And we have, because we're on a partial curfew, and I won't say a lockdown because it's not 24 hours, where you're supposed to be indoors between 8 o'clock at night and 6 in the morning, but you can do certain essential services can operate, and our financial services, our banks and our brokers are operating. So we need to make sure that we have the market available to investors to trade their assets if they so desire. So we have rotated our staff one day on, one day off, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for one team, Tuesday, Thursday, and then next week it switches. Team A would be A Tuesday and Thursday, and Team B would be Monday and Wednesday, because next week is Good Friday. So we've done that, and the whole idea is to, in event that there is contamination. We're a small office. In the event that somebody gets contaminated, we don't want to shut. We don't want a situation where the whole office shuts down. So it isolates any contamination or any infection to a particular team. We are developing a full work from home policy. And so we are doing it to some degree at this point in time. So we're sourcing equipment such as laptops, et cetera, to fully go in to fully have a program of work from home. And I want to thank Marlene for her assistance in sharing it with me, her own work from home policy that the Jamaica Stock Exchange uses. As it relates specifically to the how companies operate on our stock exchange, the main issue that we've been having is the question of AGMs. And I've been having conversations with a number of our listed companies, corporate secretaries of our listed companies, who are trying to wrap their heads around this issue. Our companies at says meetings of the shareholders, from 103 of our companies at, meetings of shareholders of a company must be held at the place within Barbados provided by in the bylaws, or in the absence of such any such provision, the place within Barbados that the directors determine. So we see from the legislation that it has to be a place. What we've been looking at is what's happening in other jurisdictions as it relates to the question of virtual meetings or hybrid meetings, where you have some persons at a place, but now we have this partial lockdown. I think the maximum persons could be in any one place is 10 persons. So the idea of virtual meetings have come into play, but there is no provision in legislation. And as Marlene stated before, we've asked our companies if there's any provisions in their bylaws for such facility. Now, one of our companies, which is incorporated in Bermuda, their legislation allows for virtual meetings. And the question is having the technology to allow persons to get into meetings virtually. So that is a consideration. But we are talking with our listed companies, and I've also been talking with our regulator FSC to see what they are thinking. And strange enough, I had a conversation with a senior officer yesterday, and they had stated, we just passed the Emergency Management Act. And the question is, does the Emergency Management Act allows us to, lack of a better word, supersede certain other requirements in our legislation? So that is something that we are discussing and looking at to see what the Emergency Management Act allows us to do in that regard. I even had a conversation with one listed company, and they were saying there's provision in the legislation that if you can start a meeting and you can adjourn it, and once you have the adjourned meeting within 30 days, you don't have to do a notice. And they were saying that probably they can get key shareholders together, start a meeting and adjourn it, because they don't want to trample on the rights of minority shareholders, and then reconvene at a later date, so that they meet the deadlines. So if it goes over 30 days, then they would have to send out a notice and go through the whole process again. So these are things that companies are thinking about as it relates to dealing with their AGM. And my approach to these companies is, put your thoughts in writing, let the stock exchange know what you're thinking, and I will approach my regulator, the FSC, and KIPO, which is the regulator for the Companies Act in Barbados, the Corporate Affairs Intellectual Properties Office. They are the regulators for our Companies Act, and see what they're thinking and what can be done under the Emergency Management Act. As it relates to reporting, that is, we had gave some regulatory relief, and what we had cited based on how we see this pandemic developing is that we said to our listed companies in a notice to our corporate secretaries and the companies, is that we will give you a 45-day extension period for the filing of your quarterly and financial statements. I had a discussion with our FSC again yesterday, and what they are saying to me is, Marlon, you need to extend it. And the thinking of the FSC here in Barbados is that they will give 90 days extension period. So that is where we're heading. So I'll have to revise my notice to the corporate secretaries and companies advising them, so that I'm consistent with the listed companies that we're going to give a 90-day extension. This the situation is extremely fluid, and somehow, in my opinion, and I guess in other persons' opinions, this thing might go on for some time again, and we need to give our companies the opportunity to make sure that they provide information that is accurate, because everybody's going to infect it. Auditors, everybody. I mean, luckily for us at the stock exchange, we had our deadline for reporting is the 31st. We were fortunate enough to have our financial statements approved by our board via a Zoom meeting on the 26th last week. So we've made our deadline, but there are a lot of companies who cannot make that deadline. So that is where we're at this point in time. We need to find ways to allow companies to communicate with their shareholders in an effective way, and technology might be the way, might be the methodology to do so. And I agree with Marlene. At this time, governance is key, and all the elements of government of proper corporate governance must be followed. Companies need to keep their company their investors informed. How they treat to this matter would give investors comfort as to whether or not they want to continue to be invested, and as such, information needs to be provided to shareholders in innovative ways. And the thing is, it's not so innovative because the technology is there. It's just that the certain legal requirements as for convening annual general meetings, we have to find a way to get it done for companies. So I'll leave it there, and I'll leave it for my other colleagues from the stock exchanges to add their two cents.
Thank you, Marlon. Amoy, over to you. You're on mute. Okay,
good. I thought I was one of the baby Zoomers. So I too feel like a baby Zoomer because it has been endless meetings and Zoom meetings. And I just want to say good morning to everybody again, and thanks for everyone being here. Thanks to CCGI for putting this on. I think it's quite timely, even though it's fluid and it's unusual. So just to take off from where Marlene and Marlon left off, I just want to cover a few points on the how listed companies can continue to be compliant. And I just want to touch on a few things and then I'll elaborate. For me, at the exchange and for my guidance to listed companies, communication is king. Regular communication to all stakeholders is essential. I'll elaborate on them, but I'll just touch on the bullet points so that we have them. Delegation of a communication representative by listed companies or firms is very, very essential. So there isn't mixed messages or confusion with who is saying what to whom to our stakeholders. BCPN working remotely, ensuring that listed companies have a proper BCP plan in place. And if we don't, because this is fluid, let's work that through so that we can improve every single day, because every single day COVID-19 is changing the game on us. Companies also need to ensure that they have adequate BCP, or third parties have adequate BCP in place, because we have to be supported and served by other companies, whether it is our internet providers or our, so other companies. So we just need to ensure and reach out to them, if we haven't done so already, that to ensure that their BCP is also in place. Immediate communication of material changes. Let's not let that change at all. This is not the time to lapse on anything, and I know that was touched on in terms of compliance. Let us maintain the continued compliance and the continued reporting. Immediate communication of material changes is important and is critical. Submission of quarterly financial statements, audited annual financial statements, wherever possible. Please, we're encouraging that listed companies continue to do this where possible. And of course, if an extension is required, then use the notice period that we do have outlined in our rules to do so.
and disclosure guidance. If there is something, so COVID is upon us right now, if we have not completed our annual reports, it would not hurt for us to include something in our annual reports now that speaks to how companies are going to be addressing COVID-19, what might be some of the potential impacts, and what do they see going forward, so that stakeholders, shareholders could get a good sense of what these companies plan to do. And if I could just elaborate a little more on each particular point. So under communication is King, which is the investor outreach and regular communication to all stakeholders is essential. I feel this is a time when we need to overestimate the value of communication, not underestimate it. This is a time when we need to be reaching, we should put our communication, listed companies should put their communication on overdrive for both internal and external stakeholders. There must be enhanced coordination amongst internal teams to secure up-to-date and accurate information. So that information, if asked by anyone, can be easily and readily shared. I'm encouraging companies as well, take time to craft your messages. Not too much time, because you want to be sure that you're timely, and ensure that you have the appropriate spokespersons to deliver those messages. Again, another critical thing. Staying in touch with your stakeholders is not just important, but I believe it is going to be vital to the speed and the ability of your company to rebound, and essential to the ultimate survival of companies. So company briefing, some of the things I'm suggesting that companies can consider: company briefings, virtual sessions, replay on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, all of those things. I think companies have ramped that up. And I just say, just continue to do so, because people are locked on and glued on to all of these social media sites. So this is the time. Press releases, there are lots of companies doing that. WhatsApp group chats. Amazing how these WhatsApp group chats are so instant and so helpful, right? I want to touch on a bit on submission of quarterly financial statements and audited financial statements. And I mentioned my buzzword is comply. Listed companies should continue to submit the required financial reports within the time frame stipulated in our rules 600 and 601. And in the event of untimely delays, there is we do have a notification to us 10 business days prior to the due date advising of the delay. Please, I'm encouraging companies to stay within that. And on the hot topic of annual meetings, and I know that's something that we are all facing. So we have, according to our Companies Act, we have 15 months from the last date for existing companies, 15 months from the last date of annual meeting to hold their next annual meeting. But there is no, from all of my information, all of the discussions I've had with the SEC and also with persons from the company registrar, there's no expressed penalty. So my guidance to companies is, if you think you are going to postpone or have to postpone, obviously in this period, put out a notice to your shareholders. And of course, if another postponement is imminent, then communicate and put out another a notice to shareholders until we can work through a more clear guidance with with the company registrar or the registrar general in terms of exactly what sort of extensions or what is required to be done. Until that is clear, advising your shareholders and making that public is very important at this particular time. Some of the things that Marlon discussed in terms of meeting with the regulators and discussing it is very similar. That's what we will be doing to try to provide that clarity to companies. But as we speak now, making public announcements on the postponement will be the critical thing to do. As it relates to virtual meetings, as we begin to consider that, we can consider having two things. One, a hybrid meeting where you have some of it being virtually and some of it being where people are in a space. And that will progress as we see how COVID-19 progresses, or simply have the virtual meetings as we are very now accustomed to doing. It's just how we ensure that the minority shareholders are part of that. Those are the details that we are still working through. But there are many options to it, and there are quite a few international companies that are leveraging those resources. I noticed RBC, Canada, they have Lumi, if I'm not mistaken, and they're having their annual general meeting via that platform. So there are platforms that are available, and the TTCD is going to explore those options in terms of having the facility to potentially offer the virtual meeting services to the listed companies. And one last point I'd like to touch on before I pause, and that is on the point related to responsibilities, board of directors' roles and responsibilities in such a time, and responsiveness. I'm suggesting and guiding boards should be kept abreast of developments by management and consultants. Continue to hold subcommittee and board meetings as business continuity must be set in train, and chairpersons must have and should have regular pulse checks or calls, connect with CEOs and managing directors to identify ways in which they can provide continuous strategic leadership and guidance to facilitate speedy decision-making needed in this time. And similarly, CEOs and management team need to do the same thing with their staff members. It's important that communication is there. And I think that is it until we have another round of discussion. Thank you, Nigel.
Thank you very much, Amoy. I mean, we have heard from the three big guns. Trevor, can you share your perspective on what the stock exchange in the Eastern Caribbean is doing? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
We, in most parts of the Eastern Caribbean, we are now under 24-hour lockdown. And it's a very trying time for us. At the ECSE, we have reverted to a work from home. We are telecommuting. We are operating remotely. We had started testing that a couple of weeks ago, which is a good thing. We at first were intended to move to a half in, half out. Half of the staff would have worked by telecommuting, and the other staff in office, and rotate that. But events overtook that, and we had to then go fully to 100% of the staff operating remotely from their homes. That has thrown up some challenges. Of course, we can't deal with any physical mail. The only thing we could deal with is what comes in electronically, as we cannot access the offices. It leaves some of the work that we had previously engaged in or we had pending in abeyance, because we now can't access that and we can't get any additional information in relation to those. We operate a regional government securities market, which is what is keeping us active during this time, as governments have continued to issue securities even in these times. There's not a lot else happening in terms of the corporate, with corporate issuers. They have essentially shut down. The trading is almost non-existent at this point. I don't think there's many trades that are happening. I guess people's focus is not on trading at this moment. So the government securities market is what is keeping us busy. Of course, we continue to pay to make per month on behalf of our clients, where we have bank account information. So we are making payments through the banking system. What we cannot do at this point is issue things like checks and all that. In terms of our corporate clients, they are facing some interesting times. Many of them are now in their year end, and are facing things like audits, filing requirements, and I think I heard the last speaker mentioning the AGMs and what they are seeking to do in terms of meeting the legal requirements for meetings and things like that. And they've come to us for guidance. We have not been able to provide a lot of guidance in that regard. We have signaled to the commission that there needs to be some sort of forbearance in these times, because of if there's a curfew and people can't leave their homes, then you can't have a meeting unless you are able to have all of those who are entitled to be at the meetings on some online platforms such as this, with a number of companies with scores of small shareholders, it's almost impractical to get everybody on a platform like this to have a meeting. The question then is, are you depriving the minority shareholders of their rights? Should you then go forward with a Zoom AGM? Will that meet the requirements of the Act? Can you really really involve the minority shareholders in that way? So that's a big question for us, something that we are still struggling with. How do we go forward with that? I think the best approach would be to have some delays by the company's registrars in terms of, I shouldn't say delays, some postponements, so that the companies are able to postpone their AGMs outside of the period that is prescribed. In terms of reporting, the commission in the first instance has extended the reporting deadlines by 1 month. I think that is inadequate. I think if one had to report, your year end is in March, for example, as a number of companies are, and one had to report by the end of June, to delay to July is completely inadequate. But I guess they have taken an approach that they'll wait and see. So at June, then they may probably provide another extension. In terms of reporting, just of keeping abreast of what is happening. Yesterday I had a board meeting where I had my budget approved by Zoom. A good thing for us is that our board comes from about four different countries, so we are accustomed to having using video conferencing for our board meetings. It has not been an issue for us. We are able to continue to operate in that same way. So in the Eastern Caribbean, we are adjusting as best we could. I think it's challenging when people are locked down to get your staff all working in the same way, everybody working at the same time. But we are doing our best. We are adjusting and trying to make this work. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Trevor. We have a similar story across the board. George, can you share with us your perspective on how your clients are dealing with this? Thank you.
Morning, everybody. Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, you know, I guess it's to echo a lot of what has already been said. The where everyone is now is still at the assessment phase. You know, we think about companies and their corporate governance frameworks as it exists today, and most companies manage on a quarter by quarter basis. And now what companies have been asked to do is make an assessment in 2 weeks. And that is a very difficult thing to do because it's a lot of bottom up, you know, a lot of information has to roll up for them to then digest, for them to communicate. Hampered again by, you know, everyone has to stay home and everybody's BCP is not on the same level. So some companies can respond better than others. Because of this assessment phase and the rapidity at which it hit everyone globally, there isn't enough information out there to form an accurate assessment. The good news is that other than maybe oil and gas, which has its separate issues going on with it, there's no real discernible structural defects in the global financial markets. Unlike the last crisis that we went through in 2008, 2009, where there are actually structural defects that have to be unwound and worked out through the system. That's not the case here. What we have is a very rapid change in behavior. I think from an investment management point of view, we're more concerned about that because some of that behavior is going to revert to what used to be, but some of it will not. And the behavior that does not revert to what it used to be is going to result in dislocation. And that dislocation is where you can have permanent diminution in value. So we are looking at ways in which, I mean, Nigel talked about Zoom and that platform, but there are multiple examples across different industries of changes in behavior that if this continues or we can't get a handle on a cure or a vaccine, I mean, could become permanent. Obviously keeping an eye out for that. Now, right now, because we don't have enough information, the issue isn't a fundamental issue in the sense that we don't know enough to say what the impact would be on any company, I don't think. What the real issue now is a liquidity issue. You could have the strongest business in the world with the most amazing employees and everybody, all the stakeholders on board. If you run out of cash, you're out of business. And so what you're seeing is a lot of people sort of gut reaction is, okay, well, let's furlough a lot of our employees so we could cut out a big part of our overhead and then get past this little bit. What I think we should be focusing in the region is looking and learning from people who are going through it or have gone through it or at different stages of going through it. And I think that we need to be more proactive in terms of liquidity support. And liquidity doesn't mean cutting reserve requirements. Remember, if you cut the reserve requirements, all that happens is banks have more cash. But banks have to manage their capital on a risk-adjusted basis. So if they have cash, they're not going to lend it to people that are potentially in liquidity problems. So I think what we could be doing a little bit better of just to manage this part of the process is either having a coordinated central bank backstopping or actual direct intervention, which you're seeing all over the world, to get companies through this without running out of cash. So I'm hopeful that is something that comes on the agenda pretty soon. One of the things that people have, you know, everyone has talked about so far that is interesting is we are being pushed to change at an incredibly rapid rate. We all knew we needed to change. We all talked about it. We all put plans in place and then had it on a schedule. But we never really had someone light a fire and say, you need to get it done immediately. So I think a lot of that change is going to come in a very short space of time. And that is going to have a profound effect on corporate governance, because, you know, if I could just think of Shepherd, for instance, I mean, policies, procedures, workflows, the oversight, monitoring, compliance, internal audit, all of those policies and procedures have to be looked at now, because the way you operated 2 months ago is not the way you're going to operate, I think, at least for the foreseeable future. So that change, I think, is there as well. And we talk about laws, and laws are, you know, laws are set to govern in context. You know, when the context changing, the laws have to change, because we can't continue to say, well, you know, your law prescribes that you have to be there in person when you literally cannot be there in person. So I think we need to deal with those issues. And I think it was Darwin said, you know, it's not the strongest or the brightest, but the ones most responsive to change are going to get through this. To summarize, it's still a little bit early. Where we're spending most of our time now is on credit, believe it or not, not on equity, making sure that the credits are there, or the credit quality is there, because I think that is going to be the leading indicator of what is to come in the equity market. And then, you know, go through all of our clients' portfolios, make sure they're all structured properly, they all have the right asset allocation, and you know, just to weather the storm. So I think that's how I'm going to start.
Thank you very much, George. That was helpful. So let me just summarize the discussion. So I have said for a long time that work is not someplace you go to. Work is something you do. It's an output, and therefore where you work is, I'm agnostic, except of course where you have to deal with walk-in customers. Marlene said that transparency and clarity of communication was key here, and Amoy supported that with communication is king. Given the delays, it's now even more critical that companies find ways to communicate with their shareholders and their internal stakeholders as well, their customers, their employees, their suppliers. George raised a very, very important point, because not only is communication king, but cash is king. And in tomorrow's Guardian, I have an article going out saying exactly that and emphasizing that companies in Trinidad and Tobago, anyhow, I'm not familiar with what the relief measures are in Jamaica or Barbados or the Eastern Caribbean, but that companies should be helping their employees access the various relief funds that could help them to survive and put that liquidity back into the system. Critical for me there is how fast the government can get those funds to the deserving, as opposed to, for want of a better word, the undeserving. So again, the whole question of governance and boards staying close to management and continuing with meetings. I mean, given this platform, there is no reason why boards cannot continue to meet. So again, the whole concept of virtual meetings and, more importantly, virtual AGMs. Some of the literature I've been reading suggests that in doing a virtual AGM or any virtual meeting, you have to be careful, because you don't want some people in person and some people not, because the people online may feel cheated. So again, something to look at, and we could explore that in the discussion. And then the whole question of business continuity plans, ensuring that team members, employees can work from anywhere. And of course, Marlene raised the point about cyber risk. I saw this morning on something came up about Zoom is being scrutinized to see if there should be any concerns surrounding the use of Zoom. So again, being very important about the safeguards around the meetings, the privacy, et cetera, et cetera. So this is definitely a black swan event. This is change on steroids. There are, but I believe that in any situation like this, there are opportunities for those that take the time to look at the landscape and assess how they should respond. So I will shut up for a while and open it up for any questions.
If I may jump in.
Go ahead.
Nigel, one of the things that was raised to me as it relates to the AGMs is access to AGMs. You know, AGMs are for shareholders. And one of the issues that a corporate secretary raised with me is we need to find a way to have people invited to the meetings who are supposed to be there and eliminate persons who are not to be at the meetings from the meeting. So this is something, you know, and we were working through the mechanics, particularly when it comes to persons who might not be fully abreast or familiar with the technology, for example, Zoom or any other technology. I heard mentioned before something called Luma, I think. Amoy mentioned that particular platform. But that is what we need to, that's one of the issues that need to be considered too when it comes to having meetings virtually, making sure that the right people are there and the persons who are not to be there are not there.
Very important point. And again, you have to make sure the technology can handle the making sure that only people who are invited or who are eligible should be able to join the meeting and vote, et cetera, et cetera. Any other observations, questions, concerns?
Well, as we are waiting for the other participants to respond, I was thinking, Nigel, that issue that Marlon just raised in terms of persons attending meetings, there's the other side of the coin where I have often heard the difficulty in AGMs when it appears that the majority of shareholders really are happy to let the boards continue, so long as they feel that the value of their shareholding has not been affected. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I've often heard that you have more directors in the room than you have shareholders. And I just wonder if this may not be one of those opportunities that may flip the switch and you actually find so many more shareholders better able to attend because it's more convenient to them wherever they are. And because they're paying so much more interest to the changes in the environment, they actually would be more interested in participating. So we would begin to see a lot more shareholder activism and actually very vibrant and excellent annual general meetings.
Agreed, of course we have to ensure that the baby Zoomers are brought up to speed on or whatever the technology is, are brought up to speed on how to use the technology. Marlene?
Yes, I wanted to comment on the AGM. This might be futuristic, but I think we have to look there. There is no development in terms of blockchain technology, mm-hmm. and how one can enter a meeting, mm-hmm. And I suspect that one will have to now start to define what a meeting is, a place is, and that takes care of having persons who are actually shareholders being at the meeting as against others who are not really to be there. And I think it is a time for the exchanges in the region to ramp up that investigation. Actually, we are at the Jamaica Stock Exchange, we are doing that now with NASDAQ because they have such a technology. And what we will do is to see how that dovetails, or should there be any changes to not only our rules, but in terms of legislative changes in getting that done. Because we know that this, we're not going back to a pre-COVID environment. So we are now going to have to quickly look at how we adapt to some of these issues that come out of what we are seeing. I just want to also say, in respect to the AGM, we have actually written to our minister to provide guidance, because the minister, and there are some legislation that the minister can put in place to provide some guidance as to the AGM. So we are waiting for him to come back to us as to how that would progress.
Excellent point on blockchain, Marlene. I think the possibility of using the blockchain and blockchain technology, distributed ledger technology, to support the controls and the experience necessary for virtual AGMs is spot on. I'm happy that you're working with NASDAQ, and we look forward to maybe you sharing with the other exchanges and moving us all into the 21st century. Amoy?
I agree with Marlene on the blockchain. I just wanted to share as well on the virtual platforms. These virtual platforms are pretty much advanced in the sense that they do have capabilities to identify, or for you to ensure that who is supposed to be at a meeting is a valid person. Because this is, you know, when I made the point of let's leverage what some of our international counterparts are doing, this is already taking place. It's just for us to determine which platform might be working best for us. And also to Kamla's point, this technology and these platforms now make it so much easier for more people to participate, because I'm sure we have seen a dwindling, and listed companies can probably attest to that. We've seen a dwindling in some company shareholder meeting, annual meetings. But with the introduction of virtual meetings or a hybrid meeting, which we can always explore some more, we will get more participation, more real-time participation, voting and access. And whilst that might expose companies to more questions, the point is that there will be greater participation at shareholders' meetings, and also still have the same level of transparency and accountability. I just think it's for us to identify, shortlist and identify some of those platforms. I do have a list that I had started working through, apart from the Zoom and the GoToMeetings. I mentioned the Lumi, and we have Cisco WebEx, EventMobi. Mm-hmm. So there, I have a list of about 18 of them. What we just have to identify is which one is going to work best for us, and potentially come together as a region and leverage on that and those capabilities. To Marlon's point, there are a couple of things that we need to consider in terms of some challenges that might be associated with it. But I do not think anything is insurmountable right now. Because we are such an adaptive culture, the region, very adaptive, that I expect that we are going to adapt to the change. It's going to be a little hard in the first instance, but it is going to happen. I think it might have been George said it, and if he didn't, but this is change on steroids. What we have to do is get every member in our firm ready and willing and capable. Every shareholder that we have, ready and willing and capable. And it is by doing that we are going to move and advance the change that needs to happen. And get our regulators willing and ready and capable as well. Yeah, I'll pause there for a minute.
Definitely. Any other questions, observations? Robbie, do you want to give us a perspective on what's going on in Guyana in this regard? or Avia.
Okay, so just as they're getting their thoughts together, I want to share with everyone who is on the session today. We did have a short while ago, Mr. Richard Rambaran, who is the executive director for the Georgetown Guyana Chamber of Commerce. He will be joining us tomorrow. He just mentioned to me he had to leave because he had other pressing commitments, but he would actually be on our session tomorrow as we continue to look at the impact of COVID-19 on businesses and organizations. So I'll leave you now to Avia. Or
see, they're both muted. What about Donald? What's going on in the Dutch Caribbean? If not, I'm just opening it up to anybody.
Nigel, I just wanted to come in on the...
Oh, good, Trevor. Go ahead.
My hand was up, but I don't think you... Yes,
sir. Oh, I didn't see it. Sorry.
I think what we have to do is to determine what is critical. So, and what is important is that the members of the company are able to attend and participate. Mm-hmm. So we have to... ensure that whatever we use, and there are lots of stuff out there, but we have to use a platform that most people are able to access. Mm-hmm. No use to get fancy about all these things. Many of our shareholders are not going to be able to play that sphere. So we have to use, and Zoom seems to be the most ubiquitous, and most people, once there's internet connection, could do that. In terms of who all attends, I mean, and there's nothing you can't control who shareholder X has in the room when he's attending the meeting. But do we need to control that? I don't know if we do. What we have to ensure that is only shareholder X or the person he or she it chooses to act on their behalf actually participates in terms of voting. And on any resolutions, electing boards and things like that. So you may have 20 other people, 100 other people other than the members in the room, but provided only that shareholder is the one who is able to vote and to make any determinations on behalf of the company, I think we're clear.
Thank you. I agree with you 100%. And I think the work that Marlene is doing and Amoy mentioned a number of platforms. Hopefully, you all can collaborate and come up with one that is most accessible and the easiest to use, if you will, for shareholders of every shape or form. And I think that is important. The question I have for you all is, go ahead, Amoy.
Just one point I just want to add. So one of the things that's also very critical to this process that we've not touched on is just ensuring that companies have a process built in to secure shareholders' consent to receiving communication and having these virtual meetings.
Right.
That's very, very important because it's an important process that we know one of those changes that we have to put in place. So I just wanted to share that before we moved off of this particular topic.
Well, thank you for that. Go ahead, Mara.
Right. If I may add to Trevor's point, is very, very important. We need to prioritize and determine what's critical. And one of the things, you know, I mentioned the question of who is in the room. And maybe, as Trevor said, that might not be the key thing, is who votes. And one of the things that can happen is that we already have in place proxy systems in place for persons to vote. And maybe what we might want to do is to have shareholders submit proxies a lot earlier and be able to have those proxy results in place at the time of the virtual meeting that we are contemplating. So that can be a way to make sure that the right people vote at the time of the meeting. So the other point I wanted to make, idea of us work, we all have depositories, Eastern Caribbean, Trinidad, Jamaica, Barbados, and maybe you are accustomed to working in the past using one platform. Maybe we can look at one platform for hosting meetings and use that as a standard across the region. So I'm very keen to work with my counterparts in the other deposit, put something like that in place, and develop another stream of revenue for our exchanges and offer even more streamlined services across.
Good point. What I was going to say, somebody was talking.
Sorry, Nigel, I just wanted to remind everyone, because I don't recall saying it at the start of our discussion, we are in fact recording this session, and the recording will be made available to all of the participants. We normally send it to you by email. And of course, this session is also available on our website at CaribbeanGovernance.org. Also, one more thing, we do have a few company secretaries on our call today, and it would be interesting to hear from them if any of them may have any specific questions based on discussion they may be having currently in-house, and they may therefore want to get some sort of clarification or share a thought on an issue we may not have raised.
I can perhaps jump in just to share a couple of thoughts. I believe that George...
Wendy, do you mind telling us the company that you are from?
Sure. I am the corporate secretary of Massey.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I just wanted to touch on a point with respect to the AGMs. I think George actually raised the issue of, you know, laws having to change to fit the context. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those areas. Currently now in Trinidad and Tobago, under the Companies Act, we require the consent of the shareholders. And I think that was mentioned before. Mm-hmm. You know, perhaps some of our groups can lobby the government for, you know, quicker change, for a small amendment to the Companies Act where, you know, a company can just hold a virtual AGM. And I think that might be the fastest route. Right now in Canada, we have a couple of companies, larger corporations, that are applying to the courts to hold virtual AGMs because they want to keep communicating with their shareholders and their investors. But we still have the practical constraints of technology. Mm-hmm. And even if the companies were to put that in place, we still have, you know, in the case of like bigger and older companies like Massey, you know, shareholders who are aged and they're not very technologically savvy. So there are many practical constraints with that. With respect to the filing of financials, and, you know, I thank God that our AGM was in January because that would have been a tough one. But even now, our quarterly financials, it's an issue. You know, we have approximately 70 operational companies over 14 mm-hmm. jurisdictions, and consolidating those results. I mean, already we have to file around, I would say, mid-May. And we're already seeing, you know, the constraints in the different jurisdictions, different technology, you know, issues. Some people are getting sick. Some people are in, you know, in zones where the virus is more prevalent. So there are a lot of constraints that are going to be happening with respect to those things. In other areas, you know, it's interestingly more efficient. Some companies are able to really focus and produce results a lot more quickly because they're working from home and they have less constraints in that respect. But there's some real practical constraints with respect to meeting filing deadlines and requirements that we're seeing evolving. That's it for me.
Thank you very much. I agree with you 100%. So we enter a situation here where I noticed over the last few days, a number of companies were putting advertisements in the newspapers, giving out their customer representatives' personal emails and in some cases mobile phones so that customers can contact them directly. I suspect that companies will now have to start or seriously consider getting the mobile phones, email addresses of their shareholders so that they can have more open, more honest, and more transparent communication going forward. So we're in a really exciting time, and as I said, a time where there is a lot of opportunity. So the question I had was, both Marlene and Amoy raised it, the whole question of communication. Because when you're communicating in an environment, in an electronic environment, it's easy to miscommunicate. And I suspect that we'll have to train our boards, train our management in what communicating like this means, because you have to be, in my opinion, extra careful and more deliberate. How would you all respond to that?
Let me come in here. I think it is extremely important that we structure communication in a way that it is effective and in a way that it tells exactly what the company intends. In most companies, for example, in our company, there is one or two points of communication. So you do not have everyone communicating. So, and it depends on the type of communication where you will have to have the not only the support, but the approval. Because what you don't want is each division, each department communicating and you have panic. And I think it is, as you say, very important that every company know, if they do not have it, craft a communication protocol so that what happens and what goes out there represent what the company wants to go out there, so that you don't have to call it back or dial it back as we normally say nowadays. Every company needs a communication strategy, a communication protocol, and persons who are able to present, because you will have the information and not be able to present it how it should be. So a communication specialist, that the message that you are trying to deliver is delivered through the proper channel and is delivered what you want to be delivered.
If I could add to what Marlene is saying, it supports the position right now that communication is king. It supports the, what I like to call crisis communication. We need a very focused approach. Crisis communication is where we're at, and having very structured approaches to how we communicate, as I mentioned earlier, who communicates and who communicates internally and who communicates externally, and then also having the backup. So as an example, for me and my team, there are two persons designated to communicate internally, and that's one primary and one secondary, so mm-hmm. that in the event there is backup. The persons who communicate externally as well, it's two persons, myself and another team member, so that there isn't confusion in the market with what's happening. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the whole crisis communication protocol that must be in place. Having very clear, concise, and crisp messages is important. And two, what's also very, very important is we should not have a message going out. Companies should not have a message going out to shareholders that their staff is not aware of them. Right? Yeah. That's just the worst thing to happen. So, I mean, it's missed or it's overlooked, but it's very, very important that all external communication must be circulated internally. So internal team members are not hearing about it. And that means, when I say internal, it also means to board members as well. So the board, mm-hmm. as well as the staff members, are aware of the communication that is going out, so that there isn't confusion. Yeah.
Excellent. Very, very important. Marlon, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, like I see we're running out of time, but I wanted to support all that was said before. But in the spirit of good communication, I wondered to hear from my colleagues from the other exchanges, are there any plans to shut down operations completely, and what would trigger the shutting down of operations?
Good question.
I'd like to take that. We have no immediate plan to shut down our operations. Just to say that we trade online, we have online trading facility so that persons, investors who want to trade can trade online. They do not have to go into their brokers. They would have made that arrangement before with that they trade through their brokers, but they can do it remotely. We believe that at this time, we should allow investors to continue their normal investment, whether they want to buy or sell. You spoke about opportunities. There will be some opportunities in the market. People will want to recalibrate their portfolios. And as it relates to our own member dealers and fund managers, they may want to ensure that for their quarter, how they shore up their funds. So we believe that commerce still continues and that there's no need at this time to shut down. However, we are guided also by what happens externally. In the event that all our member dealers decide that they are not trading, we really provide a service. So then we, then the market would not be able to operate. But for now, I think we should allow investors to go in and out of the market. And it is fluid. It is a fluid situation in terms of what is happening with COVID. So we don't know what will happen in the future. But right now, we are not contemplating that.
Okay, Amoy?
Same here. We believe at the exchange that we are an integral part of the financial services sector. We do two things. One, provide that buy and sell side. And we have been in communication, constant communication with our brokers or our member dealers. And I know a couple of them are here on the call. And as Marlene says, we provide a service. So only then, if they decide that they are not going to continue trading, then we will consider it. But at this point in time, I'm firm that we need to have the exchange open so that we could allow the purchase and sell of securities to continue. I think this is an excellent time for brokers and financial advisors to reach out to their clients, and relook and mm-hmm. as Marlene puts it, recalibrate their portfolios, mm-hmm. make mm-hmm. an assessment of it. I know you mentioned opportunity, and like you, I feel the same way. There is opportunity in situations like this, but we must be moderated and we must guide our investors. And I think the financial advisors and brokers has a really fantastic role here, as well as the listed companies in terms of making sure that they provide timely information and things like those timely information so that people stay connected to the company that they've always had their investments in. So no shutdown imminent on this part unless something drastic continues.
Thank you. Trevor?
Yeah, we will remain open as long as the banking system remains open.
Mm-hmm.
Two things really, the banking system so that our transactions could go through,
mm-hmm.
and secondly, telecommunications.
Mm-hmm.
Provided those remain open and people want to operate on the market, people want to do securities business, we are here to do it. Mm-hmm. As I said, we're completely telecommuting now. What the problem areas are really, in some cases, the banks have shut down because of the 24-hour curfew in some of the countries, and the banks have not been able to go completely telecommute. So in some cases, those banks are closed. If all of the banks in all of the countries shut down, then we, even though we are able to, we wouldn't, there'd be no business for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, if the telecommunications fail, we obviously out of business. So
yep.
That's the case. Those are the cases in which we would shut down.
Okay, thank you. George, do you have any parting words for us?
Yeah, you know, we talk about the exchanges as a mechanism of buying and selling and rebalancing portfolios and so on. But we're also forgetting a very important part. I know in Trinidad, for instance, TTCD is also the paying agent for many of the listed securities.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll speak for Shepherd. I mean, we have a ton of retirees and pensioners that depend on dividends to mm-hmm. live. So buying and selling is one aspect of it, but the actual cash flow that comes out of it is a huge part. I mean, because these people with a fixed income depend on their dividends that come out from the banks and the insurance companies. So any comments there?
Yes, thanks very much, George. I actually said there were two things, and that was the second one. One of the primary reasons that in my discussions as to and consideration as to why we should not close is primarily for that, mm-hmm. because I'm quite aware that we have dividend payments. In fact, we have probably two that are, not probably, we have three that are due this month. And one of the substantial reasons we wanted to remain open was to ensure those dividend payments were made, because in effect it is like cash for those very for that very target market that you cited. The challenge we do have though is that TT Post has been defined as a semi-essential service, where they are only going to be dispatching and distributing mail as it relates to CDAP and pension payments. So mm-hmm. bulk mail, like the dividend checks that goes through TT Post, some of it, they're not facilitating that at this time. However, ACH payments, yes. That leads me to the point where I think we have another opportunity ahead of us, where we need to encourage all our shareholders to complete and sign up for ACH payments so that mm-hmm. all payments can go through that forum. And that's another opportunity I see in front of us. And one I would be reaching out to not only shareholders, but to listed companies and to the brokers to see how we can forge alliances here to get persons to now complete that. So that's the feedback there, George. If there's any other question, I'm happy to answer.
I see Bye, Faye has a hand. Let me hear from Faye and then I'll go to you, Marlon.
Okay.
Faye, you had your hand up? She's not responding. Marlon, go. Sorry, she's okay. On up.
Hi. Go ahead. Sure. I just wanted to make the contribution in the disruptions that we're having in terms of the ability to hold our annual general meetings. And I suppose part of me, from my experience for many years going to these annual general meetings, is that sometimes we need to look back at the principle of these meetings and what is the purpose they serve and what are the alternatives for serving that purpose. And one of the purposes it serves is the board of directors reporting on performance. And most of our companies do a presentation to the brokers and perhaps selected investors when they release their results at the end of the financial year. I noticed in Jamaica that certainly Grace Kennedy had their presentation by way of a webinar to where everyone, the investing public as a whole, were able to ask questions. And so you don't have the voting element of the virtual AGM, which is one of the tricky parts about having a virtual AGM. That's one of the key things. But it doesn't stop companies who would normally have their AGMs at this time from another vehicle to at least report and communicate rather than wait until, you know, I think we're talking June and things like that to report on performance for 2019. And by June, there will be much more interesting and new developments for you to be talking about. So I would recommend that you look at those things, changes, encourage some of the communication, because to another point that was raised about access to AGMs being limited to shareholders, one has to wonder if that is not a bit of an anachronism, in the sense that, yes, the shareholders are the ones that have the right to vote. But more and more, we have a bigger and a wider investing public that has an interest in hearing from the company and hearing these reports on performance. So my view is that we really need to relook what we are keeping by an annual general meeting and how we are reporting and communicating, not just our shareholders, but to the investing public as a whole.
Thank you very much, Faye. I think that was really an excellent contribution, and particularly when we look at the fact that crisis really brings opportunities in so many different ways. And one opportunity is really this notion of us looking at really what was the purpose of AGMs, and therefore how do we fulfill that purpose in fundamentally different ways from when, let's say, the whole notion of listed companies first took root so many decades ago. And another point that Faye made, which we are seeing companies really addressing in different ways, but now they can possibly integrate it fully in how they function, and that is responsiveness to stakeholders. More and more, we're seeing sustainable development being the buzzword, and sustainability being the target for companies. And really, that involves ensuring that you move past just your stakeholders and financial commitments, but really being able to bring in all of those persons who have an interest and who would like to see the company function in different ways. So it gives us that opportunity to really relook that and possibly put these new things in our policy of how the AGMs will really move going forward.
Thank you, Kamala, and thank you, Faye. Marlon, you wanted to say something, and then I'll just wrap it up quickly with you, Marlene, Amoy, Trevor, and George. Go ahead, Marlon.
No, I just wanted an opportunity to answer the lollipop question I gave everybody, if they would be open for business. And like everybody else, I believe that persons should have access to their assets and to deal with them as they so desire, and we should make every effort to provide that access to the markets. As it relates to dividend payments, that is something that continues at the BCSDA, and we are making every effort to allow companies to allow dividend payments to go through. So, barring a total shutdown of the island and the participants or trading participants decide that they're unable to perform their duties as mm-hmm. traders on the exchange, we at the Barbados Stock Exchange and the depository will continue to operate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Marlene?
Yes, my wrap-up is that we cannot over-communicate, I think, at this time. It is a time when the companies need to not only deal with what is in the rear view mirror, which is the AGM, it is past performance you are dealing with, mm-hmm. but to speak to all the stakeholders, everyone, as to what is happening in their company and what to expect. In more developed countries, you have earnings, a person's company is telling you about what is to be expected in respect to earnings. And I am saying that in this time, we need now to have companies talking about what their companies are doing, their responsiveness to anything that might impact directly their businesses, so that investors can have some idea as to what is happening. I think investors will actually pay dividend to those companies, in quotes, those companies that communicate more to them. at when this is all over, they will be saying that which are the companies who continue to engage us in the conversation.
Thank you very much, Amoy.
So I just want to take off from that point. That's exactly how I feel. The companies that communicate now with shareholders, stakeholders, are going to be shining. So I encourage all companies to have the vision to shine. So let's communicate and let it be regular, let it be accurate, and also ensure that it's both internal and external. Secondly, from the TTSE side, we will continue and we will begin to more aggressively lobby to ensure that we have clarity around AGMs and things like that. So that's the second one. And two, I just want to land by saying that events like this creates opportunity and apprehension. Let us ensure that we have the right information from the right sources so that we can make the best decision and we ensure that our respective markets continue to be as stable as possible with all of the information and content that came out of here this morning. Thank you.
Trevor.
Thank you. I wanted to say firstly that we should make the distinction between the AGM and investor briefings. They are for different purposes, and we can't seek to replace one with the next. They both have to remain to serve their purposes. Without going into more detail, I'll just leave that on the table. In terms of winding up, I want to say that I think this, at the end of the day, will leave us with many opportunities, an opportunity to really leapfrog into the future in a meaningful way, where we embrace technology, and we migrate from some perhaps of the anachronistic sort of practices that still exists in our commercial legislation, the requirements that really makes no sense in a modern world like today. And I think we as exchanges probably have to be on the forefront of driving that change, of getting the political directorates to see the benefits, having come out of this experience, of making those necessary changes. There are many. I wouldn't seek to enumerate them here, but there are many things that we need to do. We need our parliaments to do in terms of legislation. And making the new ways of doing business possible under the legislation of our land. In my case, I have to deal with eight governments to get these things done. In many other cases, you have to deal with one. So I guess you'd be ahead of the curve. I think it's important because we need to move forward. We need to move our business practices into the 21st century. And not back into the 18th century. So that is going to be important going forward. There's still a number of anomalies, things where in terms of jurisdiction between securities regulators and companies registrars, all those things have to go because we need some unity. So we need some clear directions to who is responsible for what and who can readily give a definitive position on anything. I think we have those opportunities now at the end of this this crisis, we will have those opportunities to fix those things in a meaningful way going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. George.
Hey, thanks. Purely from a buy-side point of view, I think that we need to take this opportunity to make sure as broker-dealers that we reach out to all of our clients and provide comfort to the extent that we can decode information that is coming out of companies and listed companies to the extent that we can, and especially the more complex issues. Unfortunately, we are off the back of a decade of positive returns and generally. And I think the unfortunate consequence of that was that maybe some portfolios tended to get comfort in that that type of return was expected. And so they may be overexposed. I think going forward, we need to remember this, and we need to make sure as advisors that we guide clients away from dependent positions to make sure that they're not overexposed in anything going forward. Because if you're not overexposed, you're going to be fine.
Yep. Thank you all very much. We are out of time. I think we well over time, but I think the discussion was very relevant, very timely. And I'd like to thank all of you all for taking the time. I just want to leave you with the five assumptions in a crisis that any company would want to assume. It comes from Jack Welch's book, Winning. And he said, the first assumption is that you assume the problem is going to be worse than you expect. And I think in the case of the COVID-19 crisis, that is, I mean, it's madness. The other one, and they all go back to the whole question of you cannot over-communicate. There are no secrets. If there is a problem, it will come out. And if you don't want to see it on the front page of The Guardian or The Gleaner, don't do it. Or if it happens, communicate it. Your company will be portrayed in the worst possible light. And in the age of WhatsApp and WhatsApp communications, you want to be ahead of the communication cycle, not behind. There will be changes. We know that, to process and to people. That's what we have been discussing today. And the last one, and the hopeful one, is that we will survive and we will come out stronger and better. So I want to thank you all. I'll leave it there and put it over to Kamla.
Thank you very much, Nigel. I want to underscore something you said earlier, which is that COVID-19 is definitely a black swan event. And where in management, we were touting in the past that change is the only constant, as you said, this is really change on steroids.
Oh yeah.
So it places all of us in a position to really relook at where we are and how we do things. And so I really appreciate the willingness of everyone who has participated today to really help us all move forward together by sharing our ideas, sharing our thoughts, and putting some of our concerns on the table. So together we could look at how we can influence and bring about the changes that we want in a positive way. If we had some more time, I wanted to tease George and ask him for some investment advice. Because
you'll have to sign up for his brokerage.
I think a lot of us would have seen some of those conspiracy theories going around in terms of how did this all originate and what the eventual intent was, and is this really World War III happening on the ground, you know, because part of that also spoke about the stock exchange really being where the warfare is taking place, and therefore having investors have a better understanding of, in a black swan event, really, how do you move forward? So I think that's something we need to think about and see what we may be willing to share. You know, so I want to end and say thank you also so very, very much. I would be very happy if persons can also let us know what may be some of those remaining questions in your mind. What are the areas you think that we at CCGAI can address so that we bring greater clarity or togetherness and unity in our societies so that we can really have the change we want to see in the region. It's an opportunity for us to be able to do that. So thank you all very much. Just remember, the event has been recorded, and you will be able to get a copy of the link by tomorrow or so. All right, but stay in touch with us and join us possibly tomorrow. We have part 3 of the governance response to COVID-19. Take care, everyone.
Thank you all very much, and be safe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Same to you.